Welcome once again to our program, Salvation History, the Old Testament, the story of the creation, the fall, and the beginning of the redemption of humankind. Our guest again is Ron Eldred, who's teacher of religion and history, John Paul II, Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, chaplain at the Carmelites, south of Terre Haute, as you enter Allendale, and chaplain for John Paul II Catholic High at 13th and Lafayette. Ron, welcome once again back to the program. You brought us up now to, we just finished about Abraham being willing to sacrifice Isaac, and then God held his hand by an angel. They sacrificed a ram instead. And so can we kind of continue on? Anything else you want to say about Abraham before we go on to discuss Isaac in a little more detail?
Well, it was right after this event, God renewed his covenant with Abraham. And for his faith and his obedience, God again blessed Abraham and renewed the covenant that, quote, in his seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. And the angel of the Lord called Abraham a second time from heaven, I'm quoting here, and said, quote, by myself I had sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will indeed bless you, and I will multiply you as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. By your descendants shall all the nations of the earth bless themselves, because they have obeyed my voice. End of quote. This is found in Genesis 22. So he's just basically renewing the covenant that he made with him in Haran.
Our story of Abraham, Ron, is about to end. One of the last things he had to do is to get Isaac, his son, properly married off. What can you tell us about that famous story?
Since Abraham didn't want Isaac to marry any of the pagan Canaanite women, he sent his servant to his original homeland in Mesopotamia to obtain Rebekah, who was a granddaughter of his brother Nahor. This story is told in Genesis 24. It was about this time that the faithful Sarah died at Arbi, or Hebron, and was buried in a cave purchased from the children of Heath. That story is told in Genesis 23. Then Abraham died at the age of 175, was buried by his sons in the cave beside Sarah. That story is told in Genesis 25. And Abraham also had six children by another wife named Keturah, but you never do hear anything about them or anything else about them.
All right. Isn't God's covenant with Abraham technically the beginning of what we call salvation history?
Yes. The Catechism makes this perfectly clear, where it says, quote, from the beginning God blessed all living beings, especially man and woman. The covenant with Noah and with all living things renewed this blessing of fruitfulness, despite men's sin had brought a curse on the ground. But with Abraham, the divine blessing entered into human history, which was moving toward death, to redirect it towards life, toward the source. By the faith of the father of all believers who embrace the blessings, the history of salvation is inaugurated. And of course, the catechisms are referring to Abraham, Father Abraham.
Okay, so Abraham is the father of the Jewish people, as George Washington is the father of people, us as Americans.
Sure, and the spiritual father to Christians and Muslims alike.
Okay. Any final closing remarks about Abraham before we go on to his son Isaac?
Just one comment from a biblical scholar who writes, quote, God's call to Abraham marks the start of a new stage in his dealings with mankind. because his covenant with Abraham will prove a blessing to all nations. It means that Abraham has to break earthly ties, ties with his family and place, and put his trust entirely in God's promise, an unknown country, many descendants, even though his wife is barren, and God's constant protection. This divine calling also involves a break with the idolatrous cult, followed by Abraham's family in the city of Haran, apparently a moon cult, so as to worship the true God. Abraham responds to God's call, believing and trusting totally in the divine word. He leaves his country and heads for Canaan. Abraham's attitude is in sharp contrast with the human pride connected with the Tower of Babel, and even more with the disobedience of Adam and Eve, which was the cause of mankind's break with God. That is in a quote from this biblical scholar. And just one last little comment here. God's covenant with Abraham was eventually to include the entire human race. The Catechism says of this matter, quote, God chose Abraham and made a covenant with him and his descendants. By the covenant, God formed his people and revealed his law to them through Moses. Through the prophets, he prepared them to accept the salvation destined for all humanity. The people descended from Abraham would be the trustee of the promise made to the patriarchs, the chosen people, called to prepare for that day when God would gather all his children into the unity of the church. They would be the root on which the Gentiles would be grafted once they came to believe. That's the end of that quote. And his promises to Abraham were fulfilled because, as we've said a couple of times here, today half the world's population, maybe even more, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, claim Abraham as their spiritual father. And moreover, God knew what he was doing. It's all part of salvation history. When he had Abraham and his family move to the promised land in Canaan, because it was located at the center of the crossroads of three continents, Asia, Africa, and Europe. And of course, it was a place from which Christianity could more easily spread when the time came, about 1,800 years later, when Christ came into the world.
Okay, that's a real insight that I haven't heard before, that this little land of Canaan, or Israel today, or what was called Palestine, is the crossroads of three continents, Asia and Africa and Europe. So it's it belies in its smallness how central it is in geography.
And which, of course, I think explains why there's been so many wars over the centuries in that area and over that area.
Okay. Well, this brings us to Isaac, the natural son of Abraham and Sarah, or Sarai. What can you tell us about this famous Isaac?
Well, as we discussed, Isaac was Abraham's son by Sarah. And his name means laughter because his parents laughed at the idea that Sarah could conceive and bear a child at the age of 99 or so. We find this story in Genesis 17 and 18. As we related in our discussion of Abraham at the age of 40, Isaac married Rebekah, who was brought from Haran to Canaan. Remember, that's one of the last things that Abraham did. He wanted to make sure that his son Isaac was married to a good woman from back home, okay, and not one of the pagan Canaanite women that surrounded them. And for fear that his son would fall into idolatry, if he married a local Canaanite woman, because that all too often happened to Hebrew men over the centuries,
sure,
as you're going to find out. So he sent a faithful servant to his home region in Mesopotamia to fetch a suitable wife for Isaac. And the servant found a beautiful young woman at a watering place whose name was Rebekah. And she just happened to be the granddaughter of Abraham's brother, Nahor, and the daughter of Nahor's youngest son, Bethuel. In other words, Bethuel was Abraham's nephew. In addition to his daughter, Rebecca, Bethuel had a son named Laban. His name is going to be very important to our story. After the servant told her family of the success that their kinsman Abraham had had in Canaan, in this foreign land, the family agreed to allow her to go with the servant to become Isaac's wife. But not before they got Rebekah's approval, and after having given her family many gifts as a bride's price, the servant took Rebekah back to Canaan to become Isaac's bride. That story is told in Genesis 24. A number of years after this, after their marriage, Rebekah gave birth to twin sons, Esau and Jacob. Isaac favored the firstborn twin, Esau, who was a rough outdoorsman, a hairy man, as the Bible describes him, a ruddy, hairy man, whereas Isaac, who was more domesticated, as the Bible says, he was a smooth man, he became Rebekah's favorite. This little story is told in Genesis 25.
Okay. Well, wasn't this about the time that the famine fell on the land and causing great problems?
Yes, it was. And in response to the famine, Isaac moved his family and flocks to Gerara of the Philistines. That would be over to the west along the Mediterranean shore in that area. As his father had done before him, both in Egypt and Gerara with Abimelech, Isaac deceived the king Abimelech, the same king, out of fear by telling him that Rebekah was his sister. The story goes over and over and over again. And as he had his father, Abraham, the king, chastised Isaac when he found out of the deception. Afterwards, God appeared to Isaac in Gerara, blessed him, and renewed the covenant he'd made with his father, Abraham. Afterwards, God appeared to Isaac and said, quote, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and to your descendants, I will give you these lands, and I will fulfill the oath which I swore to Abraham, your father. I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and will give to your descendants all these lands, and by your descendants all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So what God is doing here, of course, is renewing that covenant he made with Abraham, now with his son.
And it's always, if you keep my commandments, there will be a blessing.
Yes.
And if you don't, there you'll get into all sorts of problems. And
of course, that's what a covenant is. It's an agreement between God and man. And there's two sides of the bargain, so to speak. You obey my commandments, you do my will, and I'll bless you with land and lots of descendants. And he adds, of course, to that as time goes by. Well, Isaac prospered in this strange country, but his envious neighbors troubled him, and he migrated to Beersheba, and he died in Hebron and was buried by Esau and Jacob. He was 180 years old, according to the Bible, when he died. Isaac has been considered a type of Christ, as we said earlier, because he was prepared to die out of obedience to his father Abraham, as Christ offered his life in obedience to God the Father for mankind. As Christ rose from the dead and returned to his father by divine intervention, Isaac was returned safe to his father Abraham. These are some of the kind of things that the church fathers in their interpretation of the Bible have told us.
See, comparisons and foreshadowings,
right,
and types or images. Okay, well, let's talk about Jacob, the brother of Esau and Jacob.
The story of Jacob begins around 1800, we're not exactly sure, give or take 100 years one way or the other. As we have said, Jacob was the son of Isaac and Rebekah. And when Isaac first saw Rebekah, he fell in love with her immediately. But she didn't conceive a child for a long time. We didn't tell this story earlier when we were talking about Rebekah and Isaac. Finally, when she did, she conceived twins. children who seemed to be fighting each other even in their mother's womb. She inquired of God as to why there was such a struggle going on in her womb, and he answered, quote, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger. When her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came forth red, all his body like a hairy mantle. So he was called Esau. Afterwards, his brother came forth, and his hand had taken hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Now, this is found in Genesis 25. So in other words, this struggle in the womb was who was going to be born first of the twins. And so Esau gets up there, you know, and comes out the birth channel first, and Jacob's holding on to his heel.
Okay.
And there was a struggle.
And of course, the firstborn child is the one who has the main inheritance.
That's right. That's correct.
And
a double portion of the inheritance, plus he inherits his father's role as the head of the clan, you know, head of the tribe, the family.
Okay, Esau, the firstborn, the rugged archer, hairy one, was the favorite of his father, and Jacob was the favorite of his mother, Rebecca. So how about this relationship? What can you say?
The character of the family's members is made evident, I think, as the story unfolds. Although he was younger than his twin Esau, everyone knows the story of how Jacob bought Esau's birthright for a pottage of lentils. There was some soup of some kind. And with his mother's connivance, obtained the father's blessing as firstborn. That would take some time to tell that whole story. As I said, it's such a well-known story, we won't go into the details. But it's one of the reasons, of course. In fact, the name Jacob itself means supplanter. In other words, he supplanted his brothers and took his brother's birthright. But once the blessing had been given by deception, though it could not be taken back, according to Genesis 27. One scholar has noted that surely Isaac couldn't have been fooled by the trickery of Jacob and his mother, but went along with it anyway, perhaps assuming it was God's will. Although Jacob was not sorry that he obtained his father's birthright by trickery or by deception, God tolerates and uses evil to achieve his purposes time and again. Therefore, it is through Jacob's 12 sons that the chosen people are descended, that is, the 12 tribes of Israel, rather than through Esau's sons. The prophet Malachi said that Jacob's preferences of Isaac over Esau was a divine indication that Jacob was predestined to be the father of the chosen people, the Messiah. And Esau, he married one of Ishmael's daughters, although he, like most of the patriarchs, had other wives as well.
Okay, I remember that famous quote the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And that was the reference to how Rebecca and Jacob tricked Isaac into giving the blessing.
Well, as you know, as the story goes, since we weren't going to talk about it, maybe it's a good idea too. Jacob came in from the fields and Esau come in from the fields. He'd been out hunting. He was an outdoorsman and probably with a bunch of his buddies. And he was really hungry. And there's old Jacob. He's cooking home, little domesticated Jacob. He's cooking this soup. Esau said, you know, I'm so hungry. I'll give you my birthright. I think he was probably kind of half kidding. My birthright if you give me some of this soup. And so he did. Still the father had to give the blessing. And once the blessing was given, though, according to the custom of the time, it could not be withdrawn. So Rebecca, obviously, she wanted her son Jacob to be the inheritor, and this, that, and the other. She was his favorite, her favorite. So they tricked old Isaac into giving the blessing. Isaac's real old, and he's sitting in his tent, and he's blind, can't hardly see. And so the mother sends in Jacob with some kind of a skin or something
kind
like
of
that.
Goat skin
put over his arm or something like that. And
to make him feel like he was carrying Esau.
So he asked his father for his blessing, and certainly old Jacob or old Isaac, even though he's blind, had to know that this was not, but he went along with it anyway. And so he said, well, your voice didn't sound like it. So he puts his arm out there and feels this hairy arm, you know. And
the voice is the voice of Jacob, right. But the hands are the hands of Esau.
So he gives the blessing, and so once the blessing was given. Well, of course, Esau was very angry after this, and we'll get to that part of the story here later.
Well, okay. Didn't Esau found a new people also?
Yes, Esau founded the country of Edom. Edom, sometimes in the New Testament, it's called Edomia rather than Edom. But it means red or ruddy from his complexion. And the country was located south of the Dead Sea in a mountainous region. The Edomites were to become implacable enemies of the Israelites for many centuries. Much later, they opposed the Israelites when Moses wished to pass through their country on his way to the Promised Land. We'll get to that later. And nevertheless, God commanded that Moses not disturb them, just go around them. They were never included among the membership of God's people. Deuteronomy makes that very clear. David defeated the Edomites much later, and Edom remained a tributary of Judah until the time of Joram, king of Judah, between 549 and 542 B.C. Another story we'll be getting into in four or five sessions. The Edomites, they sided with King Nebuchadnezzar when the Babylonians attacked Jerusalem in 587. And as we shall see in later sessions, Judas Maccabeus conquered Edomite cities. And John Hyrcanus required that all Edomite males be circumcised. And during the first century, the Edomite or Edomitan governor, Antipater, supported the Roman general Pompey, for which he was rewarded with the title of procurator. And this is significant because his son Herod became king of all of Palestine, the same man who was the king at the birth of Christ, the wicked King Herod. So the Edomites were always at loggerheads with the Israelites.
And the Edomites were the family of Esau.
Yes, and they were struggling from the time of the womb all the way down to the time of Christ.
Okay. Well, what happened to Jacob after he stole Esau's birthright?
Of course, Esau was very angry when he found out that Jacob had stolen his birthright. For as the firstborn son, he would have become the head of the family or the tribe and be entitled to a double share of the inheritance. Because he feared for his life after his deception was discovered and with the urging of his mother so he could escape from his brother's wrath, Jacob fled to his uncle Laban's in Mesopotamia. In other words, he went about 400 miles to the east, almost straight east.
We're back again in what modern-day Iraq?
Iraq, northwestern Iraq. Recall that Laban was his mother Rebekah's brother. And on the way to Bethel, he had a vision of a ladder with angels ascending and descending to and from heaven. Everyone's no doubt heard the story of, Jacob's ladder.
There's a famous black spiritual. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. It's a very poignant song.
Well, in his vision, God renewed the covenant he had made with his grandfather Abraham and father Isaac that promised in his seed all nations of the earth should be blessed. So now the covenant has been was given to Abraham, renewed several times, then renewed with Isaac, and now, of course, it's being renewed with Jacob. He promised that in his seed all nations of the earth would be blessed. Church fathers have said that Jacob's ladder symbolized God's special providence and care for Jacob. Angels bring his prayers and needs to God's throne. and descend with God's blessing.
Okay, so you always hear in the Bible quoted Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because that's the way that the covenant's being passed down.
Father, grandson, and great-grandson, of course. Or father, son, and grandson.
Okay. What happened to Jacob when he got to Mesopotamia, which is Iraq today?
Well, when he got there, he met a beautiful young woman at a well with whom he fell in love at first sight. And as it turns out, she was his uncle Laban's daughter, Rachel. And after staying with Laban's family for a month, Laban asked Jacob what wages he wanted to continue serving him, and Jacob said that he wanted Rachel's hand in marriage. This is another famous story, too, of course. Laban agreed, and Jacob served his uncle for 7 years for Rachel's hand in marriage. But after his term of service was up, Laban tricked him into marrying his eldest daughter, Leah. He justified this deception by telling Jacob that it was the custom of their land for the eldest daughter to be married off first. So Jacob agreed to work another 7 years for his true love, Rachel. And so he was married, though, a week after he married Leah to Rachel. But he had to stay on another 7 years, of course, to pay, so to speak, pay for. One can say that Jacob was being paid back for his deception to his brother Esau for this. He's being deceived himself. But it was to his benefit to work for his wives, however, because he was able to obtain most of Laban's flocks before he returned home after 20 years in Mesopotamia. Jacob and Laban had been friends at first, but they became rivals as Jacob took advantage of his uncle to obtain much of the flocks.
So there's a lot of deception going on between Laban and Jacob. That Laban tricks him into marrying his oldest daughter, and then Jacob tricks Laban about how many sheep he's going to get. Okay, didn't Jacob and Laban then have a falling out?
The story's a pretty complicated one, but each accused the other of stealing the other's flocks. And when Jacob's second 7-year term of service was up, Laban got him to stay a few more years, I think it was 6, in exchange for the spotted sheep and goats of his flock. And the two tried to outwit the other by Laban trying to make sure that all the animals were born solid colored, and Jacob, by selective breeding, was using his these techniques to ensure that the best animals came out spotted. And so as it turned out, Jacob came out far ahead in his contest of wits, and as a result became very wealthy.
Okay. Well, our time is running close to the end. Do you want to say anything about his service and how he acquired his family and then went back to his own country?
Well, that would probably take too long to get into that story. We probably better save that for the next session.
All right, we'll save Jacob and going back home for the next session. We say to our listening audience, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.